Fredfin Radio, this is Niccolo Comati here at Torino 32nd edition, and today I'm joined with a beautiful crew. So let's start from the director, Jim Mikkel, then we have Linda Moran, Joe Lenzel, and Casey Lenzel. So welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yay. Welcome. Thanks for having us. Thank
you. So were you here pretty much for Jim's endeavors, but you know, everything is intertwined. In fact, we have a little retrospective here in Torino for Jim's long features. And the last one as well is Cold in July, based on Joe's book. So there's a lot of writing involved, but also the translation of writing in different mediums. So not only actually visuals, of course, or the blank paper, but also music. In fact, Casey has participated into the film. He may used some, a couple of her over compositions. So let's start from just a big random question. How was it for you to see your film translated into images? And how was it for you as well to kind of have the whole, you know, almost the challenge of translating it with maybe faith or not faith towards the original piece?
It was exciting and a little scary. The first time I saw it, I'm looking for all the stuff that's not in it, but I was so pleased. And then when I saw it the second time, I just adored it, and I've liked it better every time I've seen it. I think it, I really felt, like I said, respected, and I felt good about it, and I still do. And I think that it's been something that's not only been pleasing to me, it's been pleasing to a lot of viewers, and it's led a lot more people to the book, too.
There you go.
And for me, I thought it was going to be easier than it was, you know. I thought, because it was a short book, and it felt like there was a certain kind of simplicity to it that would make it a quick translation. And then I think we realized once we did how many puzzle pieces there were adding up to make that whole thing come together, and how as soon as you pulled one away, everything else sort of fell apart. So then it started a very long process with Linda reading every single draft and giving advice along the way about how to still make it work as a movie. Obviously, we couldn't have every piece of that. But it was hard, and it was a lot of trial and error and sending Joe different versions over the years that looked different from the final thing.
And I tried to be good, not like take it line by line, but I would say, here, give general comments. Mm-hmm. And I kept them general purposely, because mm-hmm. I didn't, and even though, you know, you want it to be what you're doing, he's the filmmaker. And I told Jim, it's your film, you know, just do it right.
No pressure.
I think it was interesting because it went from a process of a very literal adaptation at first. Yeah. I think you tried to, you know, honor every element of the book, but then what that felt like when on the page was actually further away from the book, because it was meatier and a little more bloated, and the book itself is just a fast page-turning, you know, condensed great ride. And so in the end we stripped a lot away so that the movie could have the feeling of the book, and you know, of course we had to lose some elements to achieve that, but I think in changing it we made it closer.
In fact, it was a ridiculously long journey, right? I remember I read it somewhere actually. Let's cite also another writer, and the writer actor Nick D'Amici, with which you started, of course, writing for since 2006 or something. And I've heard that actually was something around 2,000 page screenplay at the beginning.
I don't know,
which is
funny. That sounds like a
Nick joke. But it was long.
It was long.
Oh wow.
It was long.
I think Nick sent me something that was really long at one point.
I bet. I started, and Nick is the short. Nick is the one who is much more economical. So our first thing was I was going to do a draft, and Nick was going to do a draft, and then we were going to put the two together and keep what we liked of each one. And at some point, I was about 50 pages into the script, and I looked, and I was only on chapter 3 of 30, and I was just like, this is Nick. Why don't you take it from here? And then, but the first draft was very, very long, and I think it would have been like you would have needed like an intermission in the middle of it.
And over to you, Nick.
Another thing that I would like to talk about is actually music, because it's really present in the film, but in the process of creative writing as well, I kind of imagine a writer sitting down and also being very influenced by the things, also by the images in the mind, but the sounds as well, and also music makes the environment very pivotal sometimes. And for example, your use as well of this sort of juxtaposition of good old classic country and electronic synth-based patterns. Did you ever kind of have this sort of idea of like, this balance and parallel between things, or not at all?
I didn't have that idea. Yeah, I was very pleased with the results, but I mean, it never occurred to me that it would have that that sound, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I said, "Yes, John Carpenter-ish," you know. But it was not slappish. It was sort of a, you know, a nod to him.
Yeah.
It was his own. It was his own thing. I think Jim's very interesting in his musical choices, mm-hmm. you know. And what I like is that he's not singular in his taste. Right. You know, he's got a wide variety of things that he likes. I know I do. So yeah.
Very do you listen? I'm curious. Do you listen to music when you write?
No.
No, okay, that's interesting.
Then I start, get down.
And Casey, your role here as well, I mean, I'm very interested also to for the choice of the pieces that, you know, that appeared on the film. And
well, I have to say, it wasn't the songs that I expected. There are actually two songs that they were kind enough to use for the film, and I had just finished the album with John Carter Cash, and I thought, well, this is the new one. This is where I think my vocals are, you know, really at their... that are representative of what I'm doing. So I sent them the album, and then they wrote back and said, well, how about this one? And they had found a song that I had written 10 years ago, and it's sort of a Texas swing classic country sounding song. And when they used it in the Mexican restaurant scene, and I thought it fit perfectly as something that in our hometown you would have heard on the jukebox behind you. And then they had written later and just said, oh, you know, we've got another scene and we're going to put this song from the Restless album on there. And that was really great because it was sort of a real strange thing to see something that was the very beginning of my career and something that I'm mm-hmm. doing now, and they were able to use it at the same time.
I thought about that.
You know, for me, it was really exciting. And also, you know, I couldn't even watch the movie the first three times because I was just listening to the music. And Linda had tapped me on the shoulder and was like, your song's here. And I was like, okay, now I can watch the movie.
Actually, she probably wasn't watching the movie or listening to nobody else's music, just waiting for that.
Just waiting for that one song.
Press record.
Okay,
this is my moment. Let me have this.
But that's this is very interesting as well, because this I also sensed it whilst watching the film, this sort of, how can I say, like, timeless feel of the film, although it's very based on, you know, it's specific.
That, I mean, can I say something about that? I think that any good film or novel has got to be about its time, but mm-hmm. not of its time.
Yeah.
You know, because if it's just of that moment in time when it's made, and you go back and you watch the stuff, all you see is people in silly clothes. But if it has some sort of impact, like Taxi Driver is a movie of its era, but it's more than that. It's really about that era in such a way that it has echo. Because mm-hmm. it continue, you get the feeling of that time, but it's still relevant to things that continue to go on, where a lot of other things aren't, you know. So I thought that was a cool mm-hmm. thing that you know, that's one of the things I'm proud of, is I think you see that film 10 years from now,
mm-hmm.
You'll go, yeah, this is great.
The and impact's I think if the
you
same.
Could, yeah, I really believe it's a classic in the making. And I think if you could take it back in time tonight, people mm-hmm. watch, yeah, man.
That's very true. Now.
Yeah, the idea was also to make something that people actually might have watched.
Yeah, absolutely.
At its time,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Rather than a movie that we make today mm-hmm. to sort of, you know, a nod or a point back,
right.
to pointing back to the 80s, more to actually make a movie that felt like something
but,
people
watched.
Yeah,
that's what I meant too. I mean, the other thing is that you make movies in that era and they don't last, but there are movies that somehow capture aspects of the era that do last, mm-hmm. but then this is a good point too, is that was sort of like a time traveler's movie.
Well, and even the music is sort of like he said, there's some that sound sort of like there's an Otis Redding type sound in there, and the electronics.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
All of that is stuff that it won't be pegged for a time other than just like, okay, it's a classic mm-hmm. sound.
I think mm-hmm. your two songs are the only songs that were written that are made after 89,
and
know?
I thank you.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, everything else before that.
Yeah.
But I think that was why, especially Back of My Smile, I think feels so. It feels like something that could have been then.
Right.
Know? Well, the shots too were very 80s. I thought mm-hmm. it has the look. It had the wash. You know, that
I also sense it a bit 70s sometimes. Actually, there was some, especially the color patterns. Sometimes they go back
well,
to
their
giallo stuff.
Yeah,
you know, Italian.
Yeah,
things.
Cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. I like that a lot. And when you get to a different tone in the film,
mm-hmm.
it captures that different tone in the book by that use of
the lighting and
lighting and lens, true. You know, and true, stuff true. Like that. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, well, to conclude, Jim, actually speaking about time, how is it? You know, how does it feel like to actually have a little retrospective about your work?
Weird.
After now?
It's weird. It feels too early. It feels like you're
a mere child.
Yeah, it feels like you're still doing the coloring book, and the teacher's like, "Let me see it." It's cool. The coolest thing is, I think it's been the first opportunity that we've been able to see all of them in order, and the first time in for a couple years on some of them, and it's actually, I think, been really cool just to see this sort of evolution or progression and see what you're embarrassed about or not embarrassed about, or, you know, it's been very cool. It's been very cool.
It's been very cool here as well. I thank you guys for being with us.
Thank you.
This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio.
24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.